Welcome to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard weekly at this time on 1450 AM and 107.1 FM. Today's guest is Dr. Lisa May, Director of Outpatient Behavioral Health Services at UPMC Western Behavioral Health at Safe Harbor Erie. Dr. May, we really appreciate you joining us for this month's edition of Business Spotlight. Your time is very much appreciated. We have a lot of difficult topics to discuss in today's program, but first, as per tradition on our Business Spotlight program, let's have you give some information to our listeners about your background and also share your path that led you to Safe Harbor.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your time as well and asking me to be here today. I am a psychologist and I've worked with Safe Harbor now for 5 years. My path to Safe Harbor was an interesting one, actually, because I was an intern here back when I was getting my doctorate. It was part of the internship program I was involved in. And after the internship, I went on to graduate and get other jobs. And I was in private practice for approximately 10 years. And as things were progressing in my practice, I was at a point in my career where I was making some changes. And I reached out to Safe Harbor because I remembered the work I had done there as a student and really enjoyed both the kind of work that I did and the people that I worked with. And luckily, they had a position open and welcomed me back, which I'm just so happy about.
Dr. May, we're going to jump right into some of the material that we're going to be discussing on today's program. When we put this program together, it was the prior week where we saw the worst kind of tragedy imaginable. And of course, we're referring to the tragic school shooting in Uvalde, Texas. How should parents treat this situation in discussions with their own kids? And what should the conversations be like?
Well, I think that we take the lead on what to say and how to say actually from our own children and seeing where they are with all of this. Really being open to if our kids have questions or if they're worried. And we can even open that conversation with them of, you know, statements like, well, there's been a lot going on in the news, or you may have heard some things about some trouble a school had. Have you heard anything about that? Or do you have anything that you're wondering about? How are you feeling about that? Because for our kids, what we want to do is really make it very clear to them that we are interested in how they feel and what they're thinking and are there to support them.
I don't think there's any question that events like the one in Uvalde, Texas, and other ones that we've seen in the news, both recently and in past years, can lead to anxiety in young children. When is the time right for a parent to seek professional help from UPMC Western Behavioral Health at Safe Harbor if their child is struggling?
Well, I think it's also important to first know that sometimes anxiety can come out in children as them saying, I'm afraid of something. But more often, it will come out behaviorally. So if you notice a change in your child's behavior, and for younger children, that could even mean a regression to a younger age, or older children, they may be withdrawing or not conversing as much as the usual, not wanting to spend time with friends, that type of thing. But the big thing is if you notice a change in their behavior, again, if going back to try to open up that conversation, if, however, you're unable to get anywhere through that, they're not talking about it, and you're still noticing a change in behavior, you know, that lasts more than a week, because we can all have moods that last a day or two or, you know, a couple of days even. But if you're noticing some significant changes and it's lasting more than a few days up to a week, and they're not talking about it, you're not really getting anywhere, that's really the time to seek some professional support.
Dr. May, we've heard about the typical characteristics that go along with the perpetrators of these horrific events. Looking at it from the other perspective, what behaviors should a parent be on the lookout for if they may be noticing some disturbing issues with their own child?
Well, reaching out for some professional psychological support at that time can be very helpful as well. Again, if you've noticed changes in your child's behavior or anything that you're concerned about, many times people reach for the phone and talk to their primary care physician first, and that's a great avenue. It can be also helpful to reach out to your local psychological support, whether it be a community behavioral health center or someone that specializes only in children, but someone who's familiar with child development and could help you navigate these waters and identify what's truly problematic behavior versus what could be normal developmental behavior that's just different for your child.
I would imagine in a lot of cases that the first step toward getting help is the most difficult one to initiate.
It is, and I'd like to remind people that there's no shame at all in reaching out for help, whether it be for our children or ourselves, that in this day and age, there is so much coming at us from all different directions, that sometimes it's helpful to just talk through situations we're concerned about, talk through how we're feeling about it, and that alone can be very helpful and very stabilizing.
There have been some incidents recently, not only in our backyard, but in communities not that far from here. You had the Erie High incident, the Buffalo shooting at the Tops supermarket. These events are hitting way too close to home. How does the close proximity of events like these affect parents, children, and the community at large?
Well, I think you make a great point that the proximity does bring it up a notch or two, that it's much easier to say, oh, that doesn't happen here when it's not happening here. However, things are happening more locally, and that does raise concern. It often raises our anxiety for our own children and their safety, raises anxiety for our community, as well as people who may be already predisposed to worrying may find that their anxiety is increased a little bit just generally across situations.
Dr. May, this was brought up earlier in the show, but I think it's really important to go back to it and really stress how important it is to get rid of the stigma if you need to seek help for anxiety, if you're affected by what's happening in the world today or other factors. To sum all of this up, there never is a bad time to reach out and seek help, is there?
Well, again, I want to normalize that it is not unusual at all to feel a change in mood or even a change in feeling anxious for a day or two at a time or even a couple of days in a row. But note that typically then our mood would bounce back. We would find things that help soothe us if we're feeling anxious or help lift our mood if we're feeling depressed. So if those kinds of symptoms last for some period of time, again, more than a week, going into 2 weeks, or it's so significant that it is impacting our abilities to get things done, if it's impacting your ability to parent or take care of your children, impacting your ability to work or complete work while you're at work, or maybe even go to work, impacting your ability to take care of yourself or your home, you're finding it difficult to shower, just even getting dressed feels like too much, then it's really time to reach out for some support. And things don't have to get that bad before you reach out either. People may choose to, you know, I'm noticing that I'm feeling more anxious, or I'm noticing I'm having some mood variability. There's nothing wrong with not allowing it to get to a crisis point to reach out and say, hey, I just need some support through this. And right now, really, I would say all of us need some kind of support.
Those are great points that you bring up, Dr. May, and that helps kind of segue into what I'm going to discuss with you next. Myself and all my colleagues here at WPSE are all parents, and our kids range from 17 to into the single digits. Seeing how they absorb this information and how much information that they're exposed to can concern any parent, are there warning signs that parents should watch for with their children when it comes to coping with the world's stressors?
Well, you know, if you think of a big change that has happened over the past couple of generations, it has been really the access to news 24/7, more computerized access, more social media, that I'm in my mid-50s. I'm not ashamed to say that. And back when I was a kid, or even when my eldest, who is almost 30, was a very young child, it was a simpler time. And we hear that said all of the time. But I think part of what that means is we didn't have 24/7 news coverage. We didn't have social media that was giving us feedback, usually negatively, all of the time. There wasn't the platforms where we're constantly comparing our lives to someone else's. And so many times we have seen through those social media avenues that even what we're comparing to is not realistic. People are using filters. We're only presenting our best life forward. We're not presenting the chaos of our everyday. And several years ago, again, even a generation ago, we didn't have that. That if you were comparing yourself, it was to the people next door. It wasn't to people, you know, all across the world who were filtering what you saw. And I think what that does is increase the stress on us. It increases the negativity we're exposed to. It increases the negative news cycles that we're, you know, we get talk about going down rabbit holes, that we start reading one thing and then jump to another and jump to another. And before we know it, time has passed and we've exposed ourselves to so many negative images and statements from people. And that does take its toll.
I think the bullet point to focus on with what you just said is social media. I'm 45. The internet was in its infancy stages when I was a teenager, so I wasn't exposed to it like the teenagers are nowadays. So what can we do as parents to help the psyche of our children that are addicted to social media exposure?
Well, I think coming back to connecting as people and coming back to connecting face-to-face and as human. And, you know, I don't wish to find fault with any parenting or parenting styles. And we're all very busy people. I totally get that. But I would encourage families to, as much as they can, try to take breaks from the electronics, try to take breaks from the phone or the iPad or computer and do some things together. Have those conversations. And it could be around the dinner table for some. It could be in the car. It could be outside. It doesn't have to be. In the past, it's talked about, well, have those conversations around the dinner table. Well, these days, families may not be sitting around the dinner table. So whatever opportunities you have to connect with your teens, your children, and have those conversations about, again, how they're doing, what do they think, what's going on in the world, or what are they worried about what's going on in the world, and also engaging them in some activity that takes a break from those electronics. So whether it's a catch or a board game or going out to skateboard or, you know, walk at the park or whatever that may be, but allowing them to take a break and reflect on the values that are values within your family, talking about what do you find important, even talking about social media very concretely and talk about, well, gosh, you know, a lot of people use filters and educating about filters and maybe even educating yourself about what those filters could be. And how people may only be presenting the good things and not necessarily the typical normal things that we all go through. But I think bottom line, it comes back to that connection and that relationship. And the more we can build that, the more supported the young people in our lives feel. And they also know that they have some valuable support that no matter what they're thinking or experiencing, they're valued for that, they're loved. And that gives them that great, strong base of resilience. So when they are facing the negativity in the world, whether it's from social media or COVID or events like the recent violence, they know they have a strong base to come back to. And that can be very helpful.
Dr. May, from your perspective, especially with your experience and involvement with Safe Harbor, how important is it to keep the lines of communication open between parents and their children, no matter how uncomfortable the topic may be?
I think probably worse than not having the conversation is having the conversation and not being supportive. That if you find yourself being critical or dismissive of what they're saying, it's not the right time to have that conversation on your side as the adult. Because we not only want to have the conversation, but we want to also help create that stable, supportive environment, because that's what will help with resiliency. But certainly, sometimes these conversations aren't comfortable, and we may even feel out of our element as an adult. I think it's okay to say, oh gosh, I don't know much about that. I need to learn more about that myself, rather than just make something up, you know? Or if it's something that we're not sure how we feel about it, to be organic about that as well and say, well, you know, I need to think about that a little bit, or I haven't thought about that before. That the people in our lives that we're really close to aren't looking for us to be perfect. I think they're just looking for us to be there. So yes, you know, jumping in with both feet, opening that conversation, is far better than either not having it at all or being quite negative and dismissive.
Let's discuss COVID-19 now and the effects that it's had on behavioral health. What coping issues must we all watch for as this pandemic continues to take an emotional toll on all of us?
Well, I think we're all at risk for feeling quite overwhelmed. When COVID first started, people were overwhelmed with staying at home and feeling isolated. And then as the world opened up, there was some overwhelmed feelings of anxiety about, you know, the unseen virus and am I safe and what is safe? And now things have opened up even more. We've had the great benefit of vaccines and other medical mechanisms, but we're also still seeing a surge of COVID. So I think that we're at the point of really feeling overwhelmed and at the risk, quite frankly, of throwing up our hands and saying, well, I don't know what to do, when we do know what to do. We just need to be able to take a deep breath, step back a little bit and say, okay, well, I know what worked before, right? And that was maintaining a distance from people. If I'm sick, staying home, wearing a mask if we're in large crowds, doing those things that we've been taught really do help. We just need to remember that they do help and to do them. I think the other thing is to avoid panicking, really. That feeling a level of elevated anxiety is one thing, but we don't want to allow it to grow to the point where we don't move, or we don't leave our home at all, or, you know, we're afraid of everything. Again, utilizing the things that medically we've been taught can be very helpful, are a good strategy. And then if we're still feeling overwhelmed or still feeling really anxious, that again is a time to reach out for some support, because we want folks, and we certainly want to as individuals, want to be able to live our life. And that's really important right now.
Dr. May, can you describe the range of services available at UPMC Western Behavioral Health at Safe Harbor?
I sure can. And quite frankly, this will probably be my longest answer, because we do have a lot of services here at Safe Harbor. We have two locations in Erie. The first is our main office at 26th Street, and then we have another location at 12th Street. We also have practitioners available in many satellite locations across Erie County, including schools and many primary care physicians' offices. Both at 12th and 26th Street and the satellite locations, we have the opportunity for individual, family, and sometimes group therapy. We have psychiatric coverage, which means a doctor that can prescribe psychiatric medication. And sometimes those services are provided remotely, so through a Teams meeting or a video type of conferencing, and sometimes in person. And how that's decided really depends on the person and their clinician. So they may have reasons that medically it's not comfortable or safe for them to be out in public or be out where there's a lot of people right now. So we'd be glad to provide some teleservices as needed. We also have case management services for those who need help in managing certain situations or daily life situations in the community. If they perhaps need help managing finding housing, finding food for their family, things like that, finding medical attention. We have addiction medicine services, which include their own range of treatments, such as therapy. There's medication-assisted treatment, as well as helping clients link to detox if they need it or the appropriate level of care. We have a crisis residential unit that is often seen as a hospital diversion, which means that if you're feeling perhaps overwhelmed in life, struggling with safety, but not to the point you want to be in the hospital, but recognizing, all right, I need more support than I can get on an outpatient basis, our crisis residential unit provides 24-hour care in a residential setting, which means you go there and stay. And it's like a hotel with a shared living room. So you have your own room, but you have shared group time or shared therapy time, as well as individual therapy. And folks stay there between 5 and 7 days typically. In addition, we have a 24-hour crisis team that provides both phone consultation and mobile crisis services in the community when needed. And they are available, again, like I said, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They are always awake, so you don't have to worry about waking someone up. Staff are scheduled at varying hours, so there's always someone up and awake. And even in the middle of the night, then if you feel that you have a crisis situation or need to talk to someone in the moment, don't hesitate to call.
Now that you've laid out the range of services available at UPMC, Western Behavioral Health at Safe Harbor, tell us more about the amazing team of professionals you have, because I'm sure that's what differentiates what you offer from the rest.
Well, the advantages really lie with having at our fingertips a team of experts in just about every topic there is, whether it's medical experts that we need to connect with, experts that are known internationally on subjects such as schizophrenia or early onset psychosis programming. We can reach out, and UPMC has not only the experts that we can directly interact with, but also a ton of research behind it. So research is constantly being done. So we know that the care that we provide is evidence-based, up to the minute in what is best for whatever topic we're talking about. And we have the support, again, that if we're unsure about something or need that additional information, we have that available.
What sort of advantages has the affiliation with UPMC brought to Safe Harbor?
Well, I think historically in the community here in Erie and Erie County as a whole, Safe Harbor has had a good reputation. However, the affiliation with UPMC brings the branded reputation to the forefront, that people understand when it's UPMC, it's quality. And, you know, folks who maybe don't know anything about Safe Harbor or have never heard anything about Safe Harbor know UPMC and trust UPMC. So that helps open the door or bridge the gap when they may not have sought services here before, maybe don't know anything about behavioral health or who Western Behavioral Health is or who Safe Harbor is, but they see UPMC and feel a comfort with that. And that's helpful in reaching just a broader population of people. Another advantage that we have with being affiliated with UPMC is the opportunity for staff to gain additional training that UPMC as a whole is continually offering high quality staff training. So we constantly have staff attending meetings, attending conferences, obtaining continuing education credits, and they are really backed by a highly professional, very well trained staff. And that allows us then to train our staff to be very effective in the community.
Dr. May, as we wind down this edition of Business Spotlight, I want to take another opportunity to thank you so much for your time. Quite frankly, this is an important conversation to have considering recent events and mental health as a whole, especially with COVID-19 and the events that we've discussed. If a listener was moved today to reach out, or even a parent was moved to reach out and seek help for themselves or their child or a family member, what are some of the basic steps that they need to take to initiate the process?
Well, if someone is feeling in crisis and feels that they wish to talk to someone right now, it is urgent, and I just need someone right now. I would suggest calling the 24-hour crisis center, and that number is 814-456-2014. Again, that number is 814-456-2014. And our process for seeking services on an outpatient basis, we have an open intake process. And by that, I mean that we are open Monday through Friday and take intakes during the day. So folks can just walk in and seek what kind of help they want, if it's therapy or medication support or drug and alcohol support. And we do that in that manner because what we have found through research is that people want the help when they want it. Sometimes it is not especially helpful to schedule an appointment and have it be a month away. And by the time the appointment comes, things are a little better. I don't know if I'm going to go to that appointment. I don't know if I need it now. However, there are also situations where it doesn't work for someone to approach a walk-in clinic for a variety of reasons. Maybe they have a caregiver, transportation issues that they're scheduling around, or work, something like that. So we, of course, would schedule appointments when needed for that intake. And then it's through that intake process that the referrals to the appropriate services are made. The centralized intake really consists of an extensive interview with someone so that you have the opportunity to explain what it is that brought you in, what kind of help you're interested in. And if you're not sure, that's okay too, that we are able to review the whole plethora of services that we provide and make a plan with the individual about what meets their need at that time. And then those referrals are made at that step. So to do that, they could really present to the 26th Street office and we can get them going in the right direction.
And before we depart, Dr. May, is there anything else? Maybe there was a service that you didn't get an opportunity to talk about with UPMC Western Behavioral Health at Safe Harbor, or is there any other topic maybe that we didn't cover that you'd like to discuss before we wrap up this edition of Business Spotlight?
I think in general, I would say, I encourage folks to reach out earlier rather than, again, waiting until something gets to be a crisis. But don't feel shame if you have kind of let things become a crisis. That's okay, too. I firmly believe that all of us can benefit from support, and that support can take a number of different forms. It could be a 1 or 2 time meeting, and that may be enough. It could be more of an ongoing relationship, and that's okay too. That we are here to support the Erie community in whatever way is needed, and I would encourage folks to reach out and find how we can be helpful. Sometimes it might not even be so much an individual need for help, but you recognize in your workplace, maybe you want to understand more about something or something behavioral health related or anxiety or coping. We do a lot of community presentations as well. Or there may be a call for community presentation on suicide prevention. And folks may want to know, how do we deal with it when somebody we know is experiencing thoughts like that? We are glad to provide as much education as possible for the community so that we can help support the community in that manner as well. So again, our 24-hour crisis number is 814-456-2014. Again, that's 814-456-2014. And if you would like to present for an intake or an introduction to services, that address is 1330 West 26th Street, Erie, Pennsylvania. Again, 1330 West 26th Street.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Join us again next week as Dr. Ralph Ford, Chancellor at Penn State Barron, is in the Business Spotlight.